Seven Pillars of Wisdom by T.E. Lawrence. Read by Roy Macmillan. To S.A. I loved you, so I drew these tides of men into my hands and wrote my will across the sky in stars to earn you freedom, the seven-pillared worthy house, that your eyes might be shining for me when we came. Death seemed my servant on the road, till we were near and saw you waiting. When you smiled, and in sorrowful envy he outran me and took you apart, into his quietness. Love, the way weary, groped to your body, our brief wage ours for the moment. Before earth's soft hand explored your shape, and the blind worms grew fat upon your substance. Men prayed me that I set our work, the inviolate house, as a memory of you. But for fit monument I shattered it, unfinished. And now the little things creep out to patch themselves hovels in the marred shadow of your gift. Author's Preface. Mr. Geoffrey Dawson persuaded All Souls College to give me leisure in 1919-1920 to write about the Arab Revolt. Sir Herbert Baker let me live and work in his Westminster houses. The book so written passed in 1921 into proof, where it was fortunate in the friends who criticised it. Particularly it owes its thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Bernard Shaw for countless suggestions of great value and diversity, and for all the present semicolons. It does not pretend to be impartial. I was fighting for my hand upon my own mitten. Please take it as a personal narrative piece out of memory. I could not make proper notes. Indeed, it would have been a breach of my duty to the Arabs if I had picked such flowers while they fought. My superior officers, Wilson, Joyce, Dorney, Newcomb, and Davenport, could each tell a like tale. The same is true of Stirling, Young, Lloyd, and Maynard, of Buxton and Winterton, of Ross, Stent, and Siddons, of Peake, Hornby, Scott, Higgins, and Garland, of Wordy, Bennett, and Mackindoe, of Bassett, Scott, Goslett, Wood, and Gray, of Hind, Spence, and Bright, of Brodie and Pascoe, Gilman and Grisenthwaite, Greenhill, Dowsett and Wade, of Henderson, Leeson, Makins and Noonan. And there were many other leaders or lonely fighters to whom this self-regardant picture is not fair. It is still less fair, of course, like all war stories, to the unnamed rank and file, who miss their share of credit as they must do, until they can write the dispatches. T.E.S. Cranwell, 15/8/26. Introductory Chapter. The story which follows was first written out in Paris during the peace conference from notes jotted daily on the march, strengthened by some reports sent to my chiefs in Cairo. Afterwards, in the autumn of 1919, this first draft and some of the notes were lost. It seemed to me historically needful to reproduce the tale, as perhaps no one but myself in Faisal's army had thought of writing down at the time what we felt, what we hoped, what we tried. So it was built again, with heavy repugnance, in London in the winter of 1919-1920, from memory and my surviving notes. The record of events was not dulled in me, and perhaps few actual mistakes crept in, except in details of dates or numbers, but the outlines and significance of things had lost edge in the haze of new interests. Dates and places are correct so far as my notes preserved them, but the personal names are not. Since the adventure, some of those who worked with me have buried themselves in the shallow grave of public duty. Free use has been made of their names. Others still possess themselves and here keep their secrecy. Sometimes one man carried various names. This may hide individuality and make the book a scatter of featureless puppets rather than a group of living people. But once good is told of a man, and again evil, and some would not thank me for either blame or praise. This isolated picture, throwing the main light upon myself, is unfair to my British colleagues. Especially I am most sorry that I have not told what the non-commissioned of us did. They were but wonderful, especially when it is taken into account that they had not the motive, the imaginative vision of the end, which sustained office.